this all started because Dave and I put up a video on YouTube in which we asked women to double date us. I'm Ethan Bixell. I'm one half of Dave and Ethan, the hit comedy duo that everyone knows and loves. Well, I'm three people know and love it, at least. The people who watch CISO do, hopefully. Maybe.
And here's that original double date video.
I think we are. Okay. Do I look good? You look good. How's my positioning? Should I get closer to you?
Yep. No, it's a little too close.
Okay.
I think you're good.
Okay. Ready? Cool.
Hey, I'm Ethan.
I'm Dave.
And we're looking for a double date. We'd love to take you out if you're interested. Maybe get some drinks.
Maybe go dancing.
Sure. And we'll totally pay for the whole thing.
Yes. If you're good looking.
Yeah. Yeah, that's sort of a prerequisite for that.
Yeah.
And also, you know, if everything goes well, maybe we'll take you out for dinner.
If you're good looking.
So, like, right. Because we were basically two horny dudes on a Saturday night, who should have just probably slept with each other, we ended up creating this, like, whole career for ourselves, basically. Because, you know, once we posted that video and we actually linked it to Craigslist so that everybody could find our ad on Craigslist.
Hey guys, it's Dave and Ethan.
I'm Dave.
And I'm Ethan. And we just wanted to thank everybody who's emailed us in response to our double date ad. We had no idea that so many people would respond.
Yeah. You guys have shown us a lot of love, and we really appreciate it.
Yeah.
It's been cool.
It's been awesome, like, meeting some of you and talking with you guys.
We went on, like, 200 double dates together.
But I can say that we have had a couple of uncomfortable
interesting dates
that we can probably tell you about.
Yeah.
And that just launched us into this YouTube series.
Hey guys, it's Dave and Ethan here. I guess things aren't really going as well as we had hoped. We really haven't found love yet.
What's your idea?
Here's what we do. You know how we're going to sing a song for the girls that we like the best?
Yes.
So let's write a song right now. Let's make a song right now about what we're feeling.
Not a bad idea.
I'm going to get the guitar.
Okay.
What's that?
It's good.
That became a live show that then became, like, you know, a tour, and then it just sort of, you know, we started doing TV appearances, and then we got this show.
Looking for love. We're not looking for trouble. No one up for trouble at all. Just looking to cuddle. Just a little.
Dave and I have a show called Dave and Ethan Lovemakers that we have done. We did 6 episodes for the network. It's a show that basically, it's a satire of the old dating game, along with a couple other segments, including, you know, hidden camera. You know, we've got man on the street stuff, sketch. The show on CISO was also built off of something that we did live, like the dating game that we did live. I was already writing about other stuff, seriously, like writing about pop culture stuff so I started writing about dating as well. And I started giving, and also when we do shows, like people would come to our shows and like ask actual questions. And we'd be like, we're not equipped for this. We're two disasters. How are we giving you advice? That's how it happened.
After talking with Ethan for just a short time, it's quick to see that at least part of his story is knowing how to ride the waves in front of him. And yet, another part is learning how to make your own waves. Welcome to the CISO C-Show. I'm Andrew Steven. If you enter Ethan Fixell's name into Google, outside of comedy, you'll find a lot of articles written by Ethan. Many of which have to deal with dating.
You know, because we were in the position that we were in and I wanted to be doing some writing, you know, I would get offers from people to write about dating. I became the dating advice. I guess I wrote a dating column basically for girl.com. So here I am, this like 28-year-old dude giving dating advice to like 14-year-old girls, which I don't know what that was. That was interesting. Point of my life. I did that for 2 years though. And so it was a fun gig and I enjoyed it a lot. But then, you know, that of course translated into like, you know, stints with Cosmo and like Ask Men and like all these other dating advice columns in other magazines and publications. And, you know, I enjoyed it, and it was, you know, people were into it because of my background. And so I kind of kept pursuing it even further. And, that was a big part of my life for a couple of years, writing about dating on a serious level, in addition to the comedy.
So how annoyed were you then when I tweeted out asking people if they have any dating advice to ask you?
I wasn't annoyed at all. I mean, look, at the end of the day, it's part of how I got here. You know, it's not something that I want to be doing full time anymore, or that I want to devote much of my life to, the dating aspect of it. But
you don't want to date anymore?
Well, I'm married.
But you don't take her on dates?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Dating does go into marriage as well. And like, I think that a lot of people don't.
And this is the part of the show where we start talking about dating and relationships instead of comedy. So I guess skip ahead if you want to get to your Twitter questions, or just keep listening because the show always ends up being way too serious. Anyways.
I think that a lot of people don't realize that. Are you in a relationship?
In a relationship. Not married, but it's just about 2.5 years.
Oh, wow. So. She must be getting itchy. She's probably asking you every day what you're doing.
No, I think we're both on the same page, at least right now. So,
do you think you want to get married eventually?
I don't know. That's an interesting topic. If you would have asked me 5 years ago, I would have hands down quickly, no hesitation, say yes, I want to get married. And while there's still a lot, I'm always the type of person who falls in love quickly. I'm a hopeless romantic, and I honestly like the idea of you know, committing to someone. But then just, I don't know. There's a lot of interesting thoughts I have around sort of the patriarchal history of marriage and the, like, sort of the father giving away the daughter as a piece of property and just all this sort of interesting stuff. But that being said,
I don't know how Mark Maron, what the fuck you want to get with this, but and get into both of our deep psyches. But I mean, I thought about that a lot for a long time, about marriage and about, like, you know, what's the whole point of this or whatever. But I think ultimately, when you really find that person that you are going to marry, and you do go through with it, I've come to understand why marriage exists in our modern society. In a lot of ways, it's archaic and it's stupid. And, like, you know, I do think that there's actually something, there's some value to it. Well, I guess my point is, not only is there value to it, there's more value to it than not.
Not.
Right. Like, yeah. It's like worth it.
Was there something specific that brought you to that point, or was it just sort of years of mulling it over?
Oh, the money that you get from the wedding. I mean, you get a lot of gifts. It's just worth it. I'm telling you. I mean, financially. No, I think that when my wife and I, who was then my girlfriend, moved in together, we were talking about it the other day, about how, well, there was so much stress about, like, buying shower curtain, or like buying certain things, like, who's going to pay for this? Who's going to, like, why are we doing this? Are we moving in together for forever? Are we just, like, testing this out? It's a very stressful situation. And that's sort of like a microcosm for what a relationship is before marriage. Once you get married, like, there's a whole set of questions about, like, is this the person for me, that goes away. And that you're kind of like, okay, I've committed to this person for the long haul. And you kind of, there's an insecurity that goes away that allows you to explore much deeper issues within yourself and in your relationship.
That does sound pretty great. And then there's also something just about, like, even if it is flawed, the societal sort of, like, when you, like, society says, when you love someone X amount, the next step is to get married. And so I don't think it's necessarily wrong, just because it's a social construct to sort of follow those lines and stuff like that. And then actually something you said is actually something that someone, so there wasn't a huge response to the Twitter, but there was some direct messages, and I'm assuming maybe some people didn't want to necessarily own their questions.
Well, you didn't have to preface this by saying that there was not a huge response.
Well, there was a huge response of there's probably like 30 porn accounts that followed as soon as I tweeted that. So as if there's a bot just searching for love and dating.
Makes me feel better. You're back. You're back on my good.
But someone did ask about soulmates. What is your thoughts on soulmates, or is there such thing as the one?
No, there's no such thing as soulmates or the one. Absolutely not. I don't think so. I think that there's such a thing as, like, awesome mates, you know, like, I think that there's like, let's say like a given number of people in the world who would like be like great for you, you know, like maybe it's like 100 or maybe it's 1,000 or maybe it's 3, but to think that there's like one person who's like out there waiting for you is the same as like saying, believing in like God or an afterlife or like, you know, other spiritual shit that I just kind of don't buy into. This is taking a cynical turn, Andrew. I'm sorry. But
you know, and I'm the one who's like overly earnest and optimistic, generally speaking. So maybe there's a good yin and yang going on.
We've got a new podcast, there my you friend. Go. That's basically my thoughts on it. I think that there's like a, you know, I've talked about this with my wife as well. I think she would be more apt to believe that like we have soulmates out there, but I'm like, I unequivocally like believe like, no, there's like no one person for us. It's just a matter of like, and a lot of it's timing, right? It's like, oh wow. Like it's like that Gwyneth Paltrow, that shitty Gwyneth Paltrow movie, Sliding Doors, where you like, oh, I just happened to walk through at this time and met this person that's serendipitous. Oh wow. You could just as likely not go through that door and meet like somebody completely different, you know, or not meet that person at all. And so it's just a matter of like finding somebody who works for you at the right time and in the right place. Kind of. Is this podcast usually this, like, what's your vibe?
I don't know. It goes back and forth. I was just like, so we just had Mandel Mon of Bajillion in here yesterday. And we went down this rabbit hole too of this sort of like more seriousness. I think it's maybe what's going on in my life right now. But at the same time, I don't mind it. Like I was saying, like there is this juxtaposition of comedy and seriousness that I don't necessarily mind.
I mean, I think the best comedy is the shit that's real. And I'm actually struggling with that. Like I'm trying to get more real in my life and in my like persona and as like my brand. And I think that's part of like what I'm struggling with, like with the Dave and Ethan stuff, you know, I'm trying to push it. I would like to push it eventually. Like I want to keep doing stuff with Dave, you know, comedically, but I want to do stuff that's a little bit less, I would love to do stuff that's a little bit deeper eventually. And it's hard to do that in like, it's hard to do that in general. And I think it's like, you know, a lot of comedians spend their whole lives trying to find that serious place. And I mentioned What the Fuck and Mark Maron. And I mean, he's somebody who like is a perfect example of took a really long time to like speak 100%. I guess he was always authentic, but you know, to kind of find
it's
place.
A vulnerability.
Where, yeah, exactly. Vulnerable. Exactly. And like open, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of comics do, like Kevin Hart, I once heard him talking about how he was like, what did he call himself? Like Lil Kevy? I got to look that up. Do you remember?
Know.
Did you ever
hear about stage?
Original stage name. Hold on, I'm Googling it. It's it's amazing. Lil Kev the Bastard. I'm not joking. He called himself.
I don't even know how to respond.
Yeah. There was silence.
Yes.
Lil Kev the Bastard was his stage name. And it's just like, how can you be taken seriously that way? And now that he like talks about his like real life, he's the most, one of the most successful comedians in the world. You know, it's the same with like Louis CK, who was very like absurdist and early in his career and then became like much more straightforward and to the point and like talking about deep things, you know?
I forget who it was, but I once heard an interview with a filmmaker and he was talking about every time he sets out to write a comedy, somehow it turns into a drama with some funny parts. And the reason he theorized was in order for the comedy to feel real, for the laughs to be real, the world and the characters had to seem authentic. And I think that's kind of what we're talking about here. And in a similar way, I have a colleague who's an author. His name is Donald Miller, and recently he's been writing a lot about this idea of being vulnerable and connecting with people.
A lot of us feel like the person we are inside isn't impressive enough, and one of the therapists at OnSite said to me once, Donald, you know, animals, when they're threatened, often make themselves appear bigger than they are. And I thought, it's not just animals, right? I mean, we tend to do that. At OnSite, you have these roommates, and I walked into the cabin that we were staying in and picked my bed, and somebody else walked in and picked their bed, and we talked a little bit, and then our third roommate showed up. There were three of us in the room. And within 2 minutes of this third roommate showing up, he had told us that he was a master at karate, and he could kill us, I think, within three moves or whatever. We're like, okay, nice to meet you. And he just kind of had this tough exterior. And then as the week went on, you know, I would say, hey, man, how are you processing some of this stuff? And he'd be like, well, I really don't like all this sentimental nonsense, you know, blah, blah. One night, he got up in the middle of the night to use the bathroom, and he went into the bathroom and kind of left the bathroom door open a little bit. So there was a crack of light shining across the room onto his bed. And the other roommate kind of knocked on his bed, on his, the bed he was sleeping on, and kind of motioned and pointed over at this other guy's bed. And there was this just ratty, well-used teddy bear sitting right by this guy's pillow. And I just thought, wow, karate sleeps with a teddy bear, you know? And I don't know why, but I just loved the guy after that. And I just thought, man, this guy is playing tough to scare off threats when he's got this unbelievably endearing person inside him that he's not letting anybody see, and nobody's connecting with his deepest self because he's got it covered up with this tough guy exterior that really is, you know, is probably a bunch of nonsense. And so, you know, and as the week unfolded, watched him move more and more toward letting go of some of that stuff. He still had it a little bit when he left, though. So that's what I mean when I say I think sometimes the story that lives inside us is more beautiful than the story that we project.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. And I think it's applicable to a lot of people that I know.
It's how you make connections.
That's right.
And comedy is all about connecting with your audience.
That's right. And so the dream is to like make that vulnerable, be vulnerable, make that connection, that deep connection with the audience, but then work in a cock joke in between each, you know, great, you know, deep nugget that you're really digging into.
All right, back to the Twitter questions. When you guys do the dating game on your shows, does that ever work? Like, do people actually go out on dates?
I would say, so we had six episodes. Mm-hmm. Of the six episodes, I think one couple actually like really hit it off and like went out for real. And one of them, the girl was not into the guy, but actually ended up going out with a crew member. So that was good. But in our real, like in our live show, we've performed the dating game, you know, at college. We've been to like 300 colleges around the country, and we've performed this dating game that many times. And we've had lots of successful couples out of that, just, you know, out of sheer luck. More times than not, we'll set these people up and like, we'll be like, all right, guys, give them a round of applause. And they'll walk in different directions and
off the stage,
talk to each other again.
How hard is it to get people to like participate in the games?
It really depends on like, you know, a lot of these are done at colleges, right? So when we do it for the show on CISO, we're literally like walking around the streets and we have cameras, and a certain type of person is allured by that, you know. Mm-hmm. When we're doing it at a show at a college or a live show, it's totally different, and it totally depends on the vibe. And like where we are and like what time of day, like we'll do like a daytime show at like a community college, and like it'll be like a nightmare trying to get people to come up on stage. Yeah. You know, people are just not into it. And then we'll do like a show for like 1,000 people on a Saturday night at like a really big university that's like awesome. And like people will be like, maybe they had a drink before, maybe not. They're like a little bit looser. The lights are low. You know, it's dark. Like people are chill, and people, the hands, you know, hundreds of hands shoot up. You know, so it's, you really never know. It really ranges.
So you have this whole dating relationship side to your comedy and writing, but recently you've been writing a lot about beer and wine and alcohol. How did that get started?
I was on the road with Dave touring all these colleges, and I would visit these different cities every single day. And what I like to do is visit a brewery in every different city. I would be like, oh, well, what are we going to do today during the day? I'm going to check out this brewery because I like beer. And because I was already writing about dating, or I was writing about pop culture, I was like, you know what? I could also write about beer. And so I got this column with Serious Eats called On the Beer Trail, where for like about a year, I would write about a different beer in a different city across the U.S. and my experience. And it was so much fun. I loved it. And then from there, I kind of parlayed that into another, other publications and writing about beer for Food and Wine and Travel and Leisure and Vanity Fair and Quartz and all these other publications that were all different. All of them were so different, and they let me express different sides of myself through this one medium, which was food source or beverage, which is beer. And it's been a constant evolution for me, because once I started writing about beer, I started writing about wine, and then I started writing about spirits, and now I'm kind of in, and then coffee, and I'm kind of in all of these worlds. And I could never, I don't feel satisfied just writing about one of them or just doing one thing. And that's sort of always been how I am. And it always centers around entertainment and around writing and about performing, but it's in different ways. And I'm sure I'll come back to music, and I'm sure I'll come even harder into comedy. I'll come out of comedy, and then I'll come harder into comedy. And then
different seasons.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
What are some of your recommendations in the beer, wine, and spirits that I should try?
Oh, Jesus. I mean, that's tough, man. I mean, it's sort of it's almost like comedy, right? Who are the best comedians?
Okay, let me phrase it this way then. As someone so I'm not a huge beer fan.
Right.
When I do drink it, I typically like something like a stout or a porter. I'm a big whiskey fan, and I love rye whiskey. Bullet Rye is my go-to drink. So I wanted a beer, what are some things that I should try?
First of all, what you just did was perfect, because that's what a guy I'm a Cicerone, which is basically a beer sommelier. It's a whole certification program. And in order to recommend beer, you have to know something. You have to know what do you want to eat? Mm-hmm. What are you into? The fact that you like stouts and porters, that's great. You like darker roasted malt, and you like mm-hmm. things that
are. And I love coffee. So.
And you love coffee. That's great. I mean, well, the fact that you like that stuff helps. And, I think there's also some really great barrel-aged beers too. I get really hard for stuff that's crossover stuff that's aged in a bourbon barrel. If you like whiskey and you like stout, you're going to love bourbon barrel-aged stouts. There's plenty of them out there that are amazing. I mean, everybody bemoans the fact that Goose Island was bought out by Anheuser-Busch, but Goose Island has one of the better barrel programs in the country, and they make a Bourbon County Stout, which is aged in bourbon barrels. It's phenomenal. Stuff like that. Have you ever had anything like that?
If I have, I mean, it's honestly, it's probably been 2 years since I've had a beer.
2 years since you had a beer?
Cause I'll get old fashions or whiskey.
Holy shit, Andrew, you need some help, man. You need some variation in your life. Whiskey's great. I read a lot about that too. I'm doing a piece, right? I just submitted a piece on, High West, which does. So you mentioned Bullet, right? Bullet gets all
a go-to. It's like a places okay. have it. And stuff like
I got to get you out of Bullet, man. I got to get you out of Bullet. Bullet is a blended whiskey that they get a lot of their whiskey from Indiana, from a company called MGP. They get all their whiskey, I guess, from there. So they don't make their own whiskey. They buy it from somebody else. So, that is one thing in itself, but there's other companies that blend better than them, like High West, which is what I mentioned out in Park City. They blend. Okay, I can tie this back into comedy again too. It's like the world.
It's beautiful. Comedy, bro.
The world is comedy, man. There's artists who will just sort of take other people's stuff and repurpose it, mm-hmm. and just be shittier versions of another artist. Yeah. And then there's artists who take influence from other artists, or they take inspiration from other artists, and they combine those things and they make it their own, and that's the highest, the highest form of art is just pure creation, where you're just taking something from nothing, but nobody does that. Everybody has a little bit of inspiration from somebody, but you've got to have your own stamp on things, and you've got to have your own real twist on something. And so a brand like Bullet, I hope they never hear this podcast, Jesus. I'll never write about them. Bullet, they'll take other people's whiskey and they'll just blend it together with not much thought, and they kind of pass it off as their own. But High West, they're a company that says, hey, We know that we're taking other people's whiskey. We're blending it together and making our own spin. We're even going to take some of it and we're going to put it in rum barrels, or we're going to put it in wine barrels, or we're going to put it in a different type of barrel afterwards to kind of make it our own thing. And they're really original. So I think it's just the point is just to seek out what, no matter what it is, whether it's music or whether it's whiskey or beer or comedy, you want to seek out the producers that are doing stuff like driven out of passion and that are original in a way that's like that you is, it's an authenticity. That's really what it's
back to the vulnerability.
Vulnerability, man. And you can find that in beverages too. You know, like being that's why like High West, if by saying, hey, we blend other people's stuff, but here's why we do it. That's totally different than being like, oh, we don't blend. I don't know if we blend. It's not important. Don't worry about it. You know, like we've been around for a long time. Let's divert your attention. Yeah. You know, so it's applicable to every art form.
High West, the Ethan Fixell of comedy.
High West is the Ethan Fixell of whiskey.
There you go.
Or Ethan Fixell is the
High West of comedy.
Comedy. Yeah.
There you go. Well, thank you so much for doing this. I had a lot of fun.
My pleasure, man. My pleasure. I can go for another hour and a half now. I'll cancel my plans.
I hope it wasn't too serious.
No, I hope it wasn't too serious for you and your listeners.
No, it's this. I mean, this happens more often than not. For more of Ethan and Dave, you can see their show Dave and Ethan Lovemakers on CISO.
Absolutely. That's at CISO.com or on the CISO app.
And where can people find you elsewhere online?
The best way to find us, you can see our videos for the Dave and Ethan videos at youtube.com/Dave and Ethan. But all of my writing and all my stuff, my personal stuff, is at ethanfixell.com. It's just my name. And you know, people can follow me on Twitter, which is my name. If you Google me, is my, you know, my name, you'll find all my shit, basically. I've made it really easy for people.
Thank you for listening this week, and thanks again to Ethan Fixell. If these last few episodes have been a bit too serious, don't worry, next week we're airing our live show, so that'll be a lot of fun. Got stand-up improv and more. And if you want to know what's happening in between episodes, you can always follow us on Twitter at CISO Show, S-E-E-S-O Show. Say hi. I say hi back.